Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we're talking about the immigration crisis in America and Europe. We're also talking about the outcome of the Turkish elections, reform in Saudi Arabia, and the possibility of a new government on the moon. I hope you enjoy. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And as I like to remind our audience, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate Tom's sleeping schedule, since he is some 5 hours ahead of us and will be heading on towards midnight as this airs live here on the talk station this afternoon. Tom, good afternoon, practically good evening to you. Thanks for joining us. And curious, what's the weather like there in London? Have you found summer by any chance?
Summer has certainly found us. It is hot. It's touching 90.
Is that unusual?
Yes, it is unusual. Normally this time of year it's, you know, maybe top 80. Hmm. Summer, we've actually had a summer here, which is unusual. You know, normally people refer to, oh, do you remember that day in June when we had summer?
Sure.
And it's actually been about 6 weeks of summer.
Well,
and it looks as if it's going to keep on going on and coming and everything else.
Yeah, well, here we, of course, describe that as global warming because we call it summertime as well. I had to throw that in. Tom, good afternoon to you, or good evening to you. Tom, question for you. This is getting a lot of play here in the States. And, of course, the recent concerns associated with the well-being of the Trump staff, particularly the events in Virginia, at the Red Hen, that asked Sarah Huckabee Sanders to remove her and her family from the premises, which, by the way, interestingly enough, resulted in both Ms. Sanders and her husband, and I think other family members, to go home. But the extended family members actually went across the street to another restaurant and were followed by apparently protesters, maybe even staff from the Red Hen. And the interesting aspect of it is the extended family members are notoriously, well, shall we say, of a progressive or liberal bent. But any association with Ms. Sanders has generated a lot of debate and discussion here. And, of course, we have other concerns related to other staff members on the Trump administration. But I'm curious if the story, particularly with Sarah Sanders, has made international news.
Yes, it most certainly has. And so did the story involving Kirstjen Nielsen.
Mm-hmm.
That also hit the headlines here. And I think people are probably divided over it, just as I think they are in the States. There are people who say if you sup with the devil, then you know, expect to take the consequences.
Wow.
And a lot of people refer to Donald Trump as the devil. I personally, and I think I should express a personal opinion, because I think, you know, this is the sort of thing which does beg a personal opinion, is that I think that civility is always very important in public debate.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I don't agree on a lot of things. In fact, I don't think we agree on almost anything.
Well, every now and then I've convinced you you're wrong, and I'm still working on that.
Every now and then I've won the argument too.
Never, but it is.
But I think it's important that we are seen to be speaking to each other in a civil manner and discussing things, because that's the only way you're going to really sort out your differences.
This begs the issue, and of course, in experiences with Theresa May and the topic of Brexit, Emmanuel Macron, and the last election, which was pretty testy, and then, of course, the events in Germany with Angela Merkel, and of course, it's gotten very testy there on the issue of immigration. Do you see similar situations, experiences in the European community as has been described? Really?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, especially, I mean, living in here in the UK, especially on the issue of Brexit.
Wow.
You know, people just still are not talking to each other. And they really, I mean, this has been a really interesting week for Brexit, if we want to segue into that. Because you've had several very large businesses, Airbus, which directly employs 14,000 people and indirectly employs 100,000 people, saying that if they go for a hard Brexit, if they leave the EU customs union, they are going to have to close up shop in Britain and move to the continent. The same has been said by Jaguar, BMW, all these people, very big employers. Now, the result of this was that Boris Johnson, the foreign secretary, who's sort of the leading Brexiteer, said, and I'll just spell it out, F-U-C-K business. You know, we don't need them.
Whoa.
If they want to leave, let them go.
You know, this is very similar to, quite frankly, what President Trump has said related to the tariffs. He thinks that...
Harley-Davidson.
Harley-Davidson. And, of course, he's said that Harley-Davidson needs to just tough it out, that things will change and improve. Is there any sense in the case now, of course, it's a little different with Brexit, is there any sense that things could improve in the UK? Or is it really just a downward spiral?
Everyone's beginning to think... I think that, you know, the opinion polls are that... it's finally beginning to start to bite, that the prospect, because the government is so divided, so terribly divided over just what sort of Brexit it is, they cannot work out a policy.
The details.
And so it's a possibility, a very strong possibility now, that they will leave without a negotiated deal.
The UK is such an important part of the European economy. Could there not be just a reversion to back to how the economic condition existed before Brexit?
You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, why did Britain join before Brexit or before the EU?
Right.
I mean, before Brexit, it would mean that Britain would be effectively a member of the EU.
Uh-huh.
It can't have the same trading arrangements with the EU and also negotiate free trade agreements with other countries.
If it did that,
that would damage the EU.
Well, of course, that's the efforts on the part of the president, President Donald Trump, we're talking about here in this case, who's saying, let's get rid of tariffs altogether. What are the possibilities of the European community thinking that thought?
I think they want to protect their own market, just like anyone does. They have gotten rid of tariffs within the 27 members of the EU, or 28 members of the EU, because Britain's still a member. And they will probably always have tariffs against things like agricultural products in order to protect not just the agricultural products, but a sort of agricultural farming way of life within Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I think that... Different countries will always do that sort of thing.
Before we wrap, go to the next break very quickly with you, Tom. Again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com. Look Ahead Radio. We're talking with him this evening. It's pre-recorded. We were chatting a moment ago about the issue of civility. The civility aspect of it. Is it driven as much by national pride and nationalism, or is it economic, or a combination of both?
It's a combination of both.
Okay. I'd find that interesting. All right, well, we're going to come back to some other items, as a matter of fact, associated with the EU. We're going to discuss the issue of immigration, but also in relationship with a recent Supreme Court decision. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And as I mentioned at the opening of the program, this portion has been pre-recorded so that Tom can get some sleep. And this is an important topic we're talking about, because we chatted a few moments ago with the issue of civility and the impact, of course, the stories here in the States, but that we learned just a few moments ago from Tom, that unfortunately there's a growing divide even within the European community. And one of the issues that's dividing the European community, in my impression, Tom, and Brexit being, the issue of tariffs and free trade and things of this nature, economic being a major division, but the biggest division being immigration. And I want to talk about that in relation to Europe. But first, before we do that, let's talk about the Supreme Court's decision related to the travel ban. How is that covered in the European community? And then we'll talk about this in relationship to immigration there within your neighborhood as well. First question, the Supreme Court decision. How was that covered? Was there much opinion about that?
Well, there's several things. One, they basically agreed with the lower court still.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are an increasing number of people to say that to criticize Trump for his immigration policies at the moment because of Europe's own divisions over immigration is a bit like calling the kettle black. At the same time, it's not just the Muslim ban. If we're talking about immigration in its wider sense.
Now, wait a second.
An awful lot about the separation of families.
Okay, I want to talk. I want to correct one item here, and I've got to insist on this. It is not a Muslim ban because it does not.
I realize that because Venezuela. Oh. And North Korea are included in it.
Well, not
they
only
were
that, not only that
in it, and in, that's why in, I think people in, over here perceive it as a Muslim ban. And I think if you look at the dissenting opinions, that the dissenting justices still regarded it as a Muslim ban,
and yet
simply because it was issued within the context of his campaign statements.
Okay, and of course that we'll stipulate too. But I just have to point out, Indonesia, India, Saudi Arabia, all major Muslim communities, large Muslim populations, not restricted to the United States. It was specifically country. It was country specific here in the United States, and quite frankly, it goes to the topic and the conflicts there. In Europe as well, not only the issue of immigration from other countries that have strong cultural differences, but among those cultural differences happens to be religion as well. I had to clarify that, but continue on. And again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, LookAhead Radio. We're hearing from Tom the opinions of the general populace and the press in Europe and the conflicts and the challenges and the arguments there. So I think this is important to know what is being said, thought in other regions of the world. Back to that, Tom, the feeling that they're, if you will, Europe has to get its own house in order. And going to the issue of Brexit, one of the complaints I can perceive as being an issue of Brexit and the conflicts within the European community, which I think was also going to, I think, challenge the European Union, is this issue of immigration. And there's some real challenges, it strikes me. Your observations?
Well, at this very moment, they're having a summit meeting on this very subject. And, of course, what's really sparked it off is the Italian government, the new Italian government's position, of simply saying we will not allow any new refugee ships to land in Italy.
For clarification purposes, as you've pointed out, and the term for this in the European Union is, if you will share with us the name of this particular program or understanding, is that any emigre that comes into Italy, moves on into the European community elsewhere in the European community, can be sent back to Italy as their place of origin. Am I correct on that?
Yes, that's called the Dublin Agreement. And that is one of the main things which is being discussed now.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of things that are happening. There are discussions going on at the moment between the Italian and Libyan government about setting up refugee camps on Libya's southern border. That's on its border with countries like Chad and Mali, in order to detain people before they even get to the Mediterranean coast. In September, Libya is having a conference at which it is inviting all the littoral states to the Mediterranean that is all the states that border on the Mediterranean, to discuss how they can resolve this immigration problem, or migrant problem, as they call it. There is the problem, of course, of Germany, Christian Social Union, who are the partners with Angela Merkel's Christian Democratic Union and have been their partners since 1947, are threatening to pull the plug on this partnership unless the issue of immigration is dealt with. Angela Merkel is saying it has to be dealt with at a European level, but countries like Italy and the Visegrad countries in Eastern Europe, Poland, Slovakia, Slovenia, Hungary, they are all saying, no, we don't want to be part of any European solution. We refuse to take anyone. Claude Juncker recently said, he's the Commission president, he recently said that the European Union is in serious trouble over immigration.
This is, of course, not a surprise to us in the States here. Of course, it goes back to the issue of nationalism, national pride, cultural differences, and things of this nature. Do you anticipate, is there any indication in the media or among leaders that there will be a quick conclusion to this? I doubt it, but I'm just curious.
I don't see it. Personally, it will have to come from Germany. As I said, the Christian Social Union is based in Bavaria. They have elections coming up, I think, on the 12th of September, state elections in Bavaria, which is why they are putting pressure on Angela Merkel now to come to a German solution for the problem in Germany. And a couple days ago, the Angela Merkel's supporters within the CDU were telling the CSU, you've got to give her more time. You have to give her more time.
And
you have to give her more time to find a European-wide solution. And they're saying, we don't have more time because we have elections in September.
And we're going to get to elections here in just a moment. I want to touch on one quick item, which will come back up in a conversation about another election happening in Turkey. British defense spending debate and NATO summit. Can you wrap that up in about 2 minutes? What are we talking about? NATO's an important aspect of our conversations. It has been for quite some time, Tom.
Well, yeah, the British defense establishment is saying basically that Britain is no longer as a defensive force fit for purpose.
Ooh.
And they want to increase spending from 2% to 3%. However, the government, who's just increased spending on the National Health Service to 3.4% or by 3.4%, says there is no more money. You can't have the world's greatest health service and spend a lot of money on defense, especially if you're going to go through a Brexit and companies like Airbus are going to be leaving the country. If you do that, that's going to hit your tax revenues, and you certainly can't spend more money on defense. And so there's a real debate going on in Britain at the moment over defense spending, and a lot of it is tied to the pressure from the Trump administration saying that you've got to increase your defense spending. So that is going to be hanging over the NATO summit, which is coming up in just a couple weeks. It's also going to be hanging over President Trump's visit to the UK.
Okay, I want to talk about visitations here in just a few moments with you, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We have a lot to talk about coming up in just a few moments.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. F-U-C-K business. That was the response of Conservative British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson when told that one of Britain's biggest employers, Airbus, was planning to move out of the UK if his country left the EU customs union. The expletive was actually uttered privately, but the mercurial Boris has refused to deny it, and in politics, absence of denial is the same as claiming ownership. The shocking thing is not the Foreign Secretary's use of an expletive. His audience's used colourful language of this self-confessed admirer of Donald Trump. It is the sentiment behind it and the axis-shifting policy change it represents. The British Conservative Party has always been the party of business and financial probity. The Labour Party has been the big spending, squeeze them till the pips squeak, conscience of the nation. It is the traditional home of the social ideologues who are more concerned with correcting perceived social injustices than they are worried about securing the source of the money which pays for their correction. But Boris Johnson's expletive indicates the Tories are as ideologically driven as Labour has ever been. It is being steered by a coterie of European-hating politicians who are prepared to sacrifice Britain's finances at the high altar of Brexit. The ideologues have staged a coup in the British Conservative Party. Prime Minister Theresa May has tried to claw back some rationality. "We have always been the party of business, and we will always be the party of business," she exclaimed. But she's refused to disown her foreign secretary, and she has certainly made no move to make the only decision that will truly mollify the British business community, sacking Boris Johnson. The reason is that Boris leads his party's Brexiteers, and the Brexiteers are the tail wagging the Conservative dog. Brexit hardliners are still very much a minority within the Conservative Parliamentary Party, but they have behind them a referendum win, albeit a narrow one based on a suspect campaign. Mrs. May needs Boris Johnson in government simply because he is more dangerous out of it. But the Brexiteers' price for staying in government is high. British departure from the EU single market and customs union. This will significantly increase costs for any British-based company which conducts trade across the English Channel. Airbus is one such company. The entire British car manufacturing industry is another. Airbus in the UK is responsible for producing the wings of the European Airbus planes. These are often referred to as the crown jewels of the aerospace industry. The 14,000 people employed across 25 British sites are highly skilled and highly paid designers and engineers. It is estimated that the company generates a further 100,000 in ancillary industries. It contributes $10 billion a year to the British economy and pays $1.5 billion in taxes. And then there's the income tax paid by the workers. These are no lightweights. They earn big bucks. But if we conservatively estimate that the average salary is $70,000, that means about another $2.7 billion in revenue for the British Exchequer. Airbus is a drop in the financial ocean compared to the car industry. According to the British Society of Motor Manufacturers, the UK car industry employs an estimated 757,000 people in designing, engineering, manufacturing, mending, selling, and making components for cars. It is responsible for 7.2% of all British manufacturing. It contributes to the Exchequer an estimated $35 billion. Theresa May recently increased National Health Service spending by 3.4% in real terms until 2025. Defence Secretary Gavin Williamson wants to boost defence spending from 2% to 3% to make the British military fit for purpose. This has to be paid for either out of increased taxes or borrowings, which are no more than delayed taxes. Which is why I say, F-U-C-K Boris.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. Again, to remind you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. It's going on towards midnight where Tom is in London. We've got a lot to talk about, Tom, and you've mentioned several items here I want to touch on. One has to do with NATO, and the question I have, and we were chatting a moment ago about the funding and financing of NATO, and of course, the president has requested Germany become more involved in the funding of NATO, and this is going to require some challenges. And I want to jump over Europe here for a moment to Russia. What role is Russia playing in this? Because in reality, we've been concerned about the potential of a redevelopment of the Cold War. NATO, we still have to throw in that, shall we say, joker card, I shouldn't use that term, of President Erdogan of Turkey. What role is Russia playing in all of this? And is Russia seen as being a contributor to some of the unrest, not only in Europe, but also in the U.S.? So, you know, NATO, Russia, they're connected. Am I not correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Russia has been much more aggressive. It has almost certainly breached the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty of 1987. It is building up its nuclear forces again in breach of various SALT I, SALT II, INF, conventional weapons agreements. It is building up its forces in the Baltic. It is, well, as we know, it's poisoning people in Europe,
right.
Literally. It's being very aggressive in its overflying of the UK, Denmark, Sweden. It has staged cyber attacks on the Baltic states.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously, we know about Ukraine.
So
I think Russia, is perceived as a threat by Europeans. They are seriously worried about it.
Isn't that the real reason for NATO?
It was certainly the reason that NATO was formed in 1949. But of course, at the time, Russia had an ideological reason for wanting to
take over,
defeat Europe.
Right.
Now it doesn't.
Okay.
And so a lot of people probably in America think that the threat is not as great.
Mm.
And certainly, back in 1949, people were thinking if Europe fell, the domino theory, they'd be coming after us next.
Well, it's still there. No, the U.S. is still extremely jaundiced when it comes to Vladimir Putin and Russia. Speaking of that, you mentioned President Trump's visit to the U.K. I want to hear about that. But first, let's talk about the potential of a visit with President Putin in the near term. I know that currently we have representatives in Russia talking about this upcoming tete-a-tete. What's the opinion there in the European Communion about a President Trump, President Putin visitation?
Well, I think the feeling is mixed. I think it's important. I think a lot of people think it's important that there are discussions, that there are regular discussions. You want people to be speaking to one another, but at the same time, you don't want to give credibility to policies which you disagree with. And so there's a fine line to be drawn. So, meet with President Putin, but make it absolutely clear that you don't approve of his policies in Ukraine and elsewhere. And at the moment, they're a bit concerned. Statements like at the G7 summit where President Trump said, well, Ukraine was a long time ago now.
Right.
And that does not go well with the West Europeans.
Okay, and then the other question, and you mentioned it a few moments ago, is the possible visit on the part of the president to the UK. Is that on, and what impact might that have? Because we have another topic to talk about.
That is on. It's very interesting. It looks like he's going to be avoiding London.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is because I think if he came to London, he would meet some very angry crowds. The mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, has promised him that he would meet some angry crowds.
Right.
So he is meeting the Queen. He's not meeting her in London. He's going to Windsor Castle. He's meeting the Prime Minister. He's not meeting her at 10 Downing Street. He's meeting her at her country residence at Chequers.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's going on to Scotland to play some golf.
And question, does this in any way impact the Prime Minister's political future?
Well, if it does, it would be negative.
That's why I wondered. Okay.
A lot of people think she should not be meeting him.
Okay. Let's talk about a topic here. We're going to get into elections here just briefly, because we've got to talk about Turkey. The British electoral forms reform, what are we talking about there?
Well, there's something called the Electoral Form Society, Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And they've recently issued a report. And they've said basically that urgent action is needed to defend UK democracy.
Really?
And they say that because of the growth in the digital world, mm-hmm. The threat from cyber attacks and things like that, that democracy is under attack, that we need to tighten up misinformation, mm-hmm. Lies by politicians, misuse of personal data, overseas interference in elections, and tighter control on spending.
The only thing that I have a question about is the dishonesty of politicians, but we won't go there on that one. You'll appreciate the humor of that one. Let's talk about a very important story, and we're going to rush through a few other items, but this I want to focus on, the Turkish elections and the impact of that in the Middle East, in Europe, and of course with NATO. And my goodness, who's on first base with Recep Erdogan, the newly elected president, practically for life, of Turkey? Russia, Syria, Iran, or the European community? I'm never sure who he's holding hands with from moment to moment.
I think he's very much an opportunist and will probably try to drift between them. He certainly is no friend of the Assad regime. Okay, let's make that absolutely clear. He's never been friends with Syria. He's not friends with Israel at the moment, although he has in the past flirted with Israel.
Okay.
He is friends with Iran, and he is friends
with Russia.
Or let's say he has a working relationship with Iran, and he has a working relationship with Russia.
By the way,
and he has
just
a working relationship with Qatar.
But wait a second. Let me just also make one other observation. Turkey is a member of NATO.
Yes, it is a member of NATO. You should also note that he's recently bought a missile system
from Russia. I know.
There is nothing in NATO which says that you have to be a democracy.
Right.
It doesn't even say you have to be pro-Western. NATO also does not say that Russia is the enemy. It just says that it's there to protect its members. Mm. And Russia is the implied member, enemy. Three times since NATO was formed, Turkey has had a military government.
Right.
They've had three military coups. Greece was a member of NATO all through its military government, which was particularly vicious. So was Portugal. Portugal was a founding member and didn't have a democratic government there till 1974.
It's not so much the issue of government and governance, Tom, is knowing who your friends are. Even the European community, I think, is a little confused as to whether Turkey would like to be a member of the EU, has certain restrictions.
At the moment, Turkey doesn't want to be a member of the EU. And at the moment, it can't be a member of the EU.
Because of the form of governance.
For lots of reasons. Well, it doesn't comply with any of the rules for EU membership at the moment. Let me just say that I'm sorry to interrupt you, Lockwood, but when Erdogan was elected, very few of the European leaders jumped in to send him congratulations, except for the Secretary General of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was trying to say earlier is that the important thing from a NATO point of view is they want to keep him on board.
Okay.
And so you're going to see a lot of effort to keep him on board in NATO. And that's why Stoltenberg was so quick to jump in there and say, mm-hmm. congratulations, Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
Does the European community think that it was an honest election?
No.
Okay.
They don't think it was an honest election because
fine.
He now controls the media.
Right.
He's locked up something like 107,000 of his opponents.
Mm.
And it was held during a state of emergency with martial law being declared.
All right. Let's move.
So,
I'll
be honest.
All right. And very quickly, with about a minute to go, Saudi Arabia and reforms. And of course, now women are able to drive in Saudi Arabia. What's the feeling? Is there a sea state change?
They not only drive, they can have music performed in public.
Uh-huh.
The morality police are off the street, and the cinemas or the movie theaters have been opened.
Wow.
Now, why? Why? It's because of the economic roots. This new social reform has economic roots.
Okay.
And the crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, is a strong believer that they have to diversify the economy. 80% of Saudi Arabia's revenues are derived from oil.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a depreciating asset, not in Saudi Arabia, but worldwide.
Right.
As people are switching more and more towards non-renewable sources of fuel and energy. And so Saudi Arabia has to diversify its income and become more like some of the Gulf states, like Dubai, you know, in the United Arab Emirates, mm-hmm. Or Qatar, where they are financial hubs, they're tourist hubs, they're communications hubs. And if they're going to do that, they have to have a more open society.
So in essence, what we're seeing here is a drive as a result of economics as much as cultural issues as well. Very interesting. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. We're going to be chatting with him in just a few moments about several items. I want to talk to him quickly about the World Cup, but also the Moon Kingdom. And by the way, we're talking about Reverend Moon. We'll find out more about that in just a moment here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And he's just informed me that I made an error in when I described one of the topics we're going to be talking about, the Moon Kingdom. But before we get to that, I want to go on to two quick, real quick questions with you, Tom. World Football Tournament, the soccer match, the FIFA, World Games being conducted in Russia. Quick analysis, how well received is the Russian, the Russian community and their hospitality? What's the opinion?
Actually, they're doing very well. There was a lot of concern.
Mm-hmm.
The football hooliganism would be a problem. And Russian football hooligans have taken over the title of the world's worst hooligans from the English with a vengeance. but they have kept them under control. And I think people who are in Russia at the moment are thoroughly enjoying themselves and having a good time. And the World Cup is going very well. England is through to the next round.
Wow, that is impressive. And by the way, I'm curious, how does this aid the Russian image? And does it separate the Russian image from that of its president, Vladimir Putin?
Oh, it's a big help to the Russian image. I mean, you know, if you can humanize people, it just takes away the devil aspect,
mm-hmm.
you know. Oh, they're not as bad as they think. You know, they can drink with the best of them, and you know, they're nice chaps. This is the whole thing about visiting other countries and going around the world, and you're exposed to the fact that people are first and foremost human.
No, I have to digress here for a moment to take it all the way back to the opening conversation with you. Isn't it fascinating that as bitter as the world competition is, and it is very bitter and very strong, we haven't heard of anyone being asked to leave a restaurant because they were wearing a different nation's colors, similar to what we had experienced here in the States. That's tongue firmly planted in cheek on that one, but I think it is unique. And we've talked about that, the aspect of civility. Heck, if members of the world competition can be civil, and we both know if you want to talk about an emotional roller coaster, that's an environment. All you have to do is watch one game and listen to them shout, "Goal, goal, goal, goal." And they shout it for minutes at a time for one goal. Tom Harms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, earlier in the program, I said Reverend Moon, the Moon Kingdom, has, and you say, 100,000 citizens, and you said this has nothing to do with Reverend Moon. So please correct me.
No, you were wrong again on something.
Just to make you look good. what is this?
No, it has to do... It has to do with actually setting up a government on the moon.
Really?
Yep. There's a Russian scientist billionaire called Igor Ashabeli, and he claims that he has 200,000 people who've paid him $100 each to become citizens of the moon. And he wants to set up a government, a moon kingdom, on the moon. And he hopes eventually to have 150 million people living on the moon. And he wants them up there in about 25 years.
I'm wondering if they will have an immigration process there. That is fascinating. I had to throw that in. The name of the oligarch, is it an oligarch? Russian?
Oh, it's called Asgardia.
Asgardia.
And yeah, which is Asgard is the name of a basically a Norse mythology kingdom in the heavens.
Right. And it's how much to join to become a member, a citizen?
Well, it's two things. One, it's $100. Okay. It's 100 euros, which is roughly the same as a dollar. I think it's a year. But also, you have to hand over all of your personal digital information.
Whoa. Well,
yeah. So that's where they're really making their money.
Obviously. Okay. The Moon Kingdom, Asgard, and it's $100 a year, and the disclosure of all your digital media. Tom Arms with us this afternoon here on Look Ahead Radio, lookaheadnews.com, and of course, you're listening to Viewpoints Around the World. Tom, preparing to head to the moon, are we?
I'm off tomorrow.
All right. Viewpoints Around the World with Tom. Tom Arms, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Fly me to the moon.
Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.